session number 10767, rule 4.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, Reel 4. We were talking about when you went to Ingatestone on a bombing course. And you were talking about the different types of bombs you were introduced to then, if you could carry on.
Yeah, Ingatestone, Kent. And it was very, very interested. Very into the bombs, with the exception of the Mills, was done away with, because a percussion bomb, you'd only got to spit at it and it didn't explode. I said they were too dangerous, but I said... there's a little bit of an episode I will repeat and tell you about when I used the Mills' rifle grenade. And as a bomb, well, Jerry hadn't got one like it. He used to use what they call a tater masher. I said, to pull the cord and throw it, and I said, sometimes if there's a strong wind, it wouldn't land there. There was no weight in it at all, I said. And its explosive was very little damage. But the Mills was as good as a shell. I could describe the Mills bomb.
With more, I'm going to come back to it when you used it in the trenches. Do you want to save it till then? Because I'm going to talk about bombing when we come to the time in the trenches. So.
Go on.
Okay. What are the? So you got. What were these percussion bombs you were introduced to at Ingatestone? What types were they?
Oh, they were cylinder bombs, like a tube, you know.
And they were based on percussion. I mean, when
yes, they didn't explode till they landed.
So they're based on shock setting them off.
Yes, when it landed, you see, that hit the primer, and the primer hit the fuse instantly.
Were you taught, while you were on the bombing course, were you taught anything about bombing tactics at that time?
Not really, only that, only the usual the bayonet man and the thrower and moving along the trench, that's all.
What about tactical training generally while you were at Crowborough? What were you taught in the sense of tactics, of how to advance, how to do other things?
Not really. Not really, but more or less unceremonial, in my opinion.
You didn't practice any methods of advancing then?
Oh yes. You would climb out of a trench and advance and that. But I wouldn't say that you did anything. Only that you became familiar with the trench and how to get out of it and all that, you know.
What formation would the practice you advancing in? Was there any special way of advancing?
Well, you'd be about 5 yards apart. 5 yards apart. And, of course, the more you were spread out, the easier it would be for a machine gun to mow you down.
Did you have any practice of how to deal with things like barbed wire?
Well, of course, when you put the barbed wire up, you always left a gap, and you knew there was a gap there.
But that's in France. Would you practice that sort of thing at
Crowborough? Oh yes. We did a little bit of walking through the barbed wire. But you must always remember this: there wasn't much left of when Jerry had done a bit of shelling, or we'd done a bit of shelling. There wasn't much protection left.
But I'm thinking particularly training.
And that protection was very small. At the finish, you could stand on it and kick it out of the road, whatever was in your road, that was if it wasn't dark.
When you were in Crowborough training, did you get much practice at trench warfare generally? What trenches were like and how they were patterned?
Oh, yes. You see, there's a difference between a trench with a firing step, you see, and then you've got a connecting trench either side of you, see, leading to another firing step. They weren't all firing steps, you see, because you'd have no cover if it's a bit wider, see, and that's not much cover if a shell dropped near, so that you would spend more of your time in the other section, and if anybody wanted to pass you, well, you'd have to squeeze past one another.
And you learnt all this at Crowborough?
Oh, yes.
Did they have practice trenches dug out somewhere?
Yes, on what they call the King's Standing, that it's about a couple of miles away from the camp. It was a kind of a plateau, and the ground was more chalky than there was gorse bushes about and whatnot.
And that's where the practice trenches were dug?
Yeah.
Did you do any manoeuvres, you know, with other units of the brigade?
No, we did none.
What about any specialist training in things like signalling or anything like that?
Oh, well, that was a section of its own. I had a lieutenant in charge, and he had about a dozen or so signallers.
But you didn't do it.
And they used to go out and practice with the lamp or with the with the horse on the wire and that, which can be useful for them when they went out, or they went out with the flags.
But you didn't do that?
No, that was a special section.
Did you have any specialist training at all, or were you just trained as an ordinary rifleman?
I was trained as an ordinary rifleman.
What did you think of your training when you were there for about 10 months? What did you think of your training overall? Do you think it was adequate or not?
Oh, yes, it was adequate enough to be sent out to France.
You felt that at the time? So you were quite confident in your training?
Yes.
Do you think that confidence was justified from, just a quick answer, from what you found when you got over there?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So you not only thought you were well...
You see, you're talking to somebody now that was very, very fortunate not to be sent out with a big draft, you see. We sent out, as we got there, a big draft had gone, and while we were at Crowborough, we sent another big draft out, you see, so we were below strength again. And then we moved to, we got made up and we moved to the other side of the, we moved out to a place called Burham.
Where, sorry?
Burham, B-I-R-H-A-M, Burham. About 4 miles from Chatham, there's four places together. Chatham, Maidstone.
And when did you move there?
After we left Crowborough.
So when was that?
It should be in the, nine months. It'd be in the March, wouldn't it?
March 1916.
Yes.
And so the big draft, had gone to the had gone off.
Yes.
When had they gone off? Just before or in March?
Oh, they'd gone before.
Right. Now, getting back to the time you're at Crowborough, what sort of recreations did you have during the 10 months you were there? What did you actually? What would you do when you had free time?
Well, two or three times. We used to get on the train, walk down to the town, the village of Crowborough. It was only a village then. And we'd get on the train to Tunbridge Wells. And we'd go to a little matinee at the Hippodrome there.
A show?
Yes. And then we'd come back.
What sort of show would you see?
Well, a good comedian, you know, or a good dancer.
A variety type thing?
Yeah, a variety, yes. Oh, yes. Well, we get in a box, you know. You couldn't stop us. Sat there like the Lord Mayor. Oh, yes. And I remember the Christmas of 1915, and I got drunk. A party of us went down into the village, and we got in the local pub there, and of course I'd never drunk in my life, and I suppose after a couple of glasses or so, I was skew-whiffed, and we come back in a couple of landaws. And he snored open landau, and it snowed like hell, and then the old cabby took us back to the camp to pay him, and off we went.
That was your first time you'd ever drunk, was it? But I
got drunk, yes.
Did you drink after that?
No, it never bothered me. It never bothered me until somewhere in 1920, 21.
After the war, then?
After the war, yes, and... It cost me a lot of money, but it's kept me in good health, and I can recommend it too. Mild beer.
I'll come perhaps come back to that. So, how else would you amuse yourself? Did you smoke at the time when you?
No, didn't smoke.
You hadn't started then. What about other recreations? Were you able to play any sport?
Oh, we used to play cards. We used to have a game of cards, you know.
Would you gamble? Or would
For a penny and eighties.
And what sort of games would you play?
What is it? Brag. You know what brag is? Brag and that. Sometimes we'd play solo. Oh, yes.
And what other games would you play? Besides cards, would you play any other things?
No, not really.
What about sport?
They didn't take... They did a little bit of football, but very little. Very little football. But as regards sport, no, we didn't have any sport until we went to Colchester.
I'll come back to that then. How did you get on with the local civilians when you did go out into...
They didn't take any notice of you. I mean, you said they got used to it and whatnot. We were respected in certain people and whatnot. It was very nice. But I'd like to go back to Crowborough, where we used to get a turn on the YMCA and the Salvation Army huts. Where you could go and get a bun and a mug of tea, or cigarettes, or writing paper. But it used to come our platoon's turn to go and serve there, you see. So when our lads used to roll up, they'd go to the office and get a certain amount of this is cheated, which is part of life today. She used to say, oh, yes. So-and-so, how many tickets have you? Mind your own business, Joe. I'll have a packet of Woodbines and I'll have this, I'll have that. That'll do you see. And you do very well at you just taking over the odds, see. And the other people used to do the same that was following in, you see. But if it was a Mully Ranger, that's a stranger, he said, oh, come on. No. I'll murder you. No. See, you'd be straight with them, you know. So you'd say, perhaps it might be a penny or something. All right, let that go, you know. See, but they used to trust us and we didn't do so bad. Marvellous, isn't it?
You said they had some shows in these canteens. Who put the shows on?
Well, they did, really, but I never went to any of them. I never bothered about going to any shows or any lectures or anything like that.
So how did you amuse yourself mostly? What would you normally do to keep yourself amused?
There's one thing about Cromer I would like to tell you. I used to do a bit of reading and that. There was always something to do, I don't know why. But when I was at Crowborough, this is where I learnt my soldiering at Crowborough. When the guard used to be mounted, you see, everybody had to do a certain guard, you know, any different companies every day. And they had a guardhouse and there was a road coming facing to you from the YMCA there, coming to you, and then going to the left of you. And the guardhouse there, near the cookhouse, and they used to have loads of coal, you see, and it was all stacked up. But the outside pieces of them were all painted white, lined, you know. So, do you know why? No. Well, anybody that pinched a lump of coal, when it was found at 100 year old, you'd be in hot water, don't know where you got it from. But we used to make hole in and get it out and take two or three sacks from the inside and then replace it, you see, and stick it under the hut, you see. And our stove used to be red hot. Red hot at that time, you know.
What would you do on guard duties when you were
well,
on guard?
Well, they'd pick 6 men and they'd only require 5, you see. And the officer used to inspect you and walk round, and which one he thought was the best turn down, he took him on the pack, and then you step forward, slope arms, salute him, and then go back to the hut, you see. Now, the next day, you'd be on orderly room duty for that day, you see. So, and I used to get it very often, some reason or other. And so it got that way that if there was no stick picked or for some reason or other...
The stick man, that's what you're talking about, isn't it? Yes.
No stick man. I used to be sent for. And I used to use the regimental sergeant majors, a big portly gentleman named Anderson, John Anderson. He was an inspector in the Liverpool police, but through some political or something, he'd had a row with them. And after the war, he left us in France, after the La Bassée Front. And regimental sergeant major Powell took over from D Company. He was a company SM. And he had a lot of manuals. And while he was away, I used to study them. See?
And, military manuals.
Yes, yes. And of course... I mean, say, you'll get into Boer War stuff and everything, you know. Ours was a new era, wasn't it? See? And any road, they used to study them. And sometimes I used to have to take the post from the orderly room down into Crowborough to the post office. And I didn't follow the main road. I used to cut through the dunes, you know, and valleys and whatnot. And there was one house on the way, it'd be about 100 yards away to my right or left, which way I was going. And sometimes, within about 50 yards, I used to see a gentleman walking with a double peak cap, moustache, stick, and cape coat on, you know. And I used to always salute him. And that chap was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And he always used to wave his stick to me back. And I think to myself that I'd be the only soldier to know who he was, see? And any road, I used to go.
What were your duties when you were on the orderly room? Besides taking the post to
Crowborough. I used to see them offer a route march, 10 to 15 miles route march, and I looked at them and I'd say, poor buggers, you know. Anyway, I used to do all sorts. I'd go and tell Captain so-and-so and go to this company, that company, you know. With them.
Like an errand, like a runner?
Yes, a runner. Yes. Yes, a runner.
Hmm. And what would you do when you weren't picked for the stick man? What did you have to do when you were on guard?
When I was on guard?
Yes, when you actually weren't stick man.
Well, they had a guard on the transport, which picture you've seen in the mud there. We had a position down by the transport lines, and it was a foot deep in mud. And of a dark night, a rainy night, I said, you used to stand in the sentry boxes and you used to imagine all sorts of things. You'd hear rustlings and screeches and whatnot, what with animals and birds. I said, and there used to be a lot of gypsies round that quarter at one time, I suppose. But you had a whistle. If anything happened, you had to blow this whistle, and the guard had run down there to see what was wrong, you know. So, if you was on the cookhouse guard, you see, you'd be on only just outside the door of the guard room and just patrolling up and down there. And sometimes, if it was daylight, you'd see a horse, two horses coming, and perhaps with the brigadier general coming along, or his substitutes, or major, with his head-banded cap. And then you turn the guard out and present arms to him. As he went past. That was all. You had asserted what's names and you'd asserted entry into the sheet inventory. And you would see that everything was all right as you found it. Who was taking over, you check up and say, right, oh yes, that's right. And off you'd go, and while you were doing your stuff, they'd be having a kip.
Now, You got the stickman quite often, you said.
Yes.
Was that's because your kit and equipment, uniform, was in a better condition. Why do you think that worked? What was the secret, the fact that your uniform and equipment was better turned out for these?
I couldn't just tell you. Although I was always very keen. I was always very keen.
Were there any hint? How did you keep your shoes looking right?
Oh, well, you could. They were always spotless. And another thing, you see, if an officer tapped your foot and hold your foot up, you see, at the back, he'd look. Well, the curve between sole and heel, you used to black that and polish it. You see, you'd see whether you got it done. See? And then if 10 minutes afterwards, you'd be going through some mud. Yes. Oh, yes, I used to love it, the army, until I got to France.
So you enjoyed buffing up your kit and everything?
Oh, yes. I'm coming to a period where that knowledge that I got came in handy.
When was that?
It's way further up.
Okay, well, just one more thing I want to ask. It's really about how you got on with everybody. When you first got there, how did you get on with your fellow privates in Second Six when you joined? What type of men were they? The Third Six had been pretty much the same as yourself.
Well, most of them were the same as myself.
Still?
Yes. There was very little difference between us. There was quite a few that was more intellectual and on the university side, as you might say. They might have been one or two. But taken on the whole, they were average all the way around.
Were they you weren't special then, or separated out from the sort of class you came from?
No. Oh, no.
And everyone mixed in reasonably well?
Very well indeed.
There was no bullying, you said earlier?
No. I'll give you an instance. That we were coming back from a march, and just before we got to the camp, I pulled my water bottle off, and I had a drink, and a fella tipped me.
Tipped your arm, so you spilt the water?
Yeah, spilt water. So I said, do that in the hut, you see. Well, it came about that we had a chap named Joe Nelson, and he had a bad leg, and he used to do the transport. And sometimes he used to do the military policeman, you see, from the company, from the battalion, you see. He's more or less of an odd job man. He was a nice chap. And he didn't come out with us. And I used to save him his bowl of tea and his sausage and egg, you know, on top of it. And a fella come, and a moustache, and he come in. He got up. I said, leave it alone. Don't touch that, he said. I said, I've told you, don't touch it. So I did all this. All right. Well, of course, you had as much bread and jam and that after your breakfast. Well, I was having tucking in, stomach was out here like this. And I'm going down to the hut, and the fella said, you better run, hurry up. They're waiting for you in the hut. So I thought, right, what's to do here? So when I got in, they'd drawn all the trestles and made a ring. And two pair of boxing gloves in the middle. And this fella sat waiting, and all the up watching. So I said, what's to do? He said, oh, he's going to knock your head up. I said, oh, yes. I told Joe when he come. Oh, he said, take them. I said, but I'd have oofed him, I said. So I said, so Joe was my second, you know. So he said, just take it easy, first round. So I kept poking him and poking him. I had a good straight left, you know. And just kidding him and bump, bump, his head was going back. And then all he said, see him off. So after about half a minute or so, I cracked a bump and it brought me right over. I hit him and he went sprawling 10 to 15 yards up the hut, over these trestles. They lay there. So when he come round, I went to him, I'm sorry and all that, you know. Yeah. I said, come on in the ring again, Mr. Whittington. Come on in the ring again. He didn't. And I had three more fights after that. And I licked them all. After two rounds of puffing and blowing like no loss.
What caused the other two fights? Do you remember?
These were challenges.
Not
bad feeling.
Yeah.
See? And they were puffing and blowing. Three. Well, when we were coming back on that march, and he'd have been...
The one who tipped your water, yes.
He's a lad named Fred Archer, and a nice chap. A nice chap, and because I was blazing, you know, but a nice chap, and you know, he didn't want to bother. No, I'm not bothered. See? And he come from Boston, I believe, Freddie Archer. He was a nice fella.
So he backed down then?
Eh?
He backed down?
Well, we didn't fight any road. We didn't box. But I was in another box, but I'll tell you that later.
You quite enjoyed boxing then?
I think it's a good sport.
When did you learn it?
Well, I learnt it when I was with Jack Wallace. We used to go in his backyard.
At home?
Yes. For a while. We used to get the gloves on. Yeah.
Now, if you hadn't been able to stand up to people, do you think you would have got bullied? Do you think there was bullying of weaker members than yourself?
I don't think I'd have stood up if there was any bullying. It doesn't matter.
So you'd have intervened if someone else was being bullied?
Yeah, yes. No, definitely. Definitely. I should have died. Tried to... I'm a chap like this. I knew who I could lick. I knew who I could lick. And I never... And if you put any money on me and I'm trying, I'm there. In any sport.
Did this give you a bit of a reputation?
No. It did good. It did good, really. Not to say that I was a bit of a boxer or a street fighter or anything. But it showed them that I was a little bit independent in that direction. Oh, no. And there's another instance whereby I had a box. I had the gloves on. But that'll come later.
Right, I'll come back to that then. How did you get on with the NCOs? Before you became an NCO yourself, how did you get on? Would you have a corporal in the hut with you?
We had a sergeant and a couple of corporals. Oh, yes, they were all right. They used to think that they were the bee's knees, you know. I'm the corporal, you know. And I used to smile to myself, but they're quite a good bunch of fellas. Excellent.
Did they swear at the men or use bad language?
We never swore much.
None of the men swore?
Not very much. They didn't show themselves up or anything like that.
Would it have been disapproved of, swearing?
Well, I think so. I mean, to say the NCO would say, cut that out, and that's that.
Did that change when you got to France?
In France was a different atmosphere altogether. You were more concerned with it as regards each other. You didn't know any time like that. It was when we were in the range of the firing and all that.
I just meant whether the language got worse.
Oh, no, no.
Still not right.
No. There was none of that beer house stuff.